driving on the way down here, consciousness felt like warmed butter that was beginning to just melt into an infinite sea. So we'll see what God can do here today. This reading comes from the Vision magazine, September 2014, Invincible Spiritual Power by Swami Ram Dass. Human life is a rare gift of God. Do we believe that? Human life is a rare gift of God. It can be elevated to the highest eminence by making it dwell in a supreme and all-powerful consciousness in order to produce results beneficial to itself and to the world at large. Every human life is capable of understanding and realizing the great secret origin from which it has evolved and manifested. The moment life is illumined, and the knowledge of its omnipotence and immortality, it stands revealed in all its glory, armed with a subtle and invincible strength and power that counteracts evil and establishes righteousness in the world. Dear reader, such a spiritual power is your immortal possession. You have only to become aware of it and utilize it. Pursue the supreme blessedness of peace and freedom for yourself, and also create in the world an atmosphere of goodwill and harmony. The world, as it is seen today, influenced by the lower nature, is heading towards a course of hate and destruction. At this critical juncture, it behooves every one of you to gather up the entire spiritual possibilities of your being and work out, in concentrated thought and deed, a state of things in which the grim and devastating clashes that are imminent are made impossible. The power of the Spirit is invincible. It can stem the tide of every other power that seeks to generate chaos and confusion in the world. You are a veritable storehouse of divine energy. Open the store and let the eternal splendor that burns within you radiate its light and dispel the deepening gloom in the world. Man is not a mere man. Man is the very image of God, with all the potentialities of that supreme being. Man is an immortal power of light, love, and peace. Declare yourself as this truth. Man is not a mere man. Man is the very image of God, with all the potentialities of that supreme being. Man is immortal power of light, love, and peace. Declare yourself as this truth. Make the inherent divinity of your nature the bedrock of all thoughts and activities in the world. The passions incited by ambitions for material glory and fame, spelling disaster to mankind, can be quelled by the superior power of the Spirit. Wherever you be, in whatever situation you are placed, you can develop infinite power to resist and conquer the fury of the calamitous influence that at present aims at involving the world in a carnage of wanton bloodshed, woe, and misery. Do not believe that the material world is the only reality. Many might tell you that you are only a weak and erring mortal, that you are a helpless tool in the hands of the degrading impulses of your lower nature. No. You are the immortal reality itself, imbued with an inexhaustible strength, material as well as spiritual. The greater of the two is the spiritual that dominates over and controls the material. From the silent spirit of your being, let waves of unity, love, and goodness ever rise as the soothing aroma of the incense. Certainly, it is within your power to convert not only your life, but the life of mankind into a heaven upon earth. Thoughts pregnant with universal beneficence, words that cheer and awaken, and actions that heal and alleviate are yours. The great black cloud is at present hanging over the world, a menacing cloud that may break into an unimaginably horrible disaster. Scatter this cloud by the exercise of the omnipotent energy inherent in you. Do not merely sit and watch, but let the great spirit within you be active. Let it assert its serenity and shed on all humanity its rays of harmony and peace. May the Lord within you unite in the common feeling of brotherhood all the people of this earth and destroy the tendencies that kindle the fire of disorder and devastation among them. Is that not magnificent? Papa was so wonderful, and he was able to bring out the greatest truths in the clearest, simplest language. Barbara Lutz gave us these letters that Mother and Father Hamilton wrote to her one down through the years. And they're wonderful, and we're getting them ready now to be able to publish them, and they're really wonderful. I thought I'd read to this. Let me see what the date is. It's Mother is at Anandashram, and it's February 13th, 1958 is the date. From 10:30 until 1:30, Papa reads, rests, and has his lunch. Then comes the most perfect time of the day, when we are privileged to go to his room and gather around his feet. A comfortable armchair, the seat, backs, and arms of which are covered with a beautiful blue cushion-like material embroidered in white, together with a small footstool padded with the same material, make a charming frame for his beloved form. A small boy sits with his back against the wall, pulling a rope which waves a puka back and forth over Papa's head, providing the breeze necessary to keep the room comfortable. We sit in a semi-lotus posture, forming a half circle around him with everything in readiness. Papa beams at us, seems to listen while God tells him whether he should open a book and read to us, tell us a story, or just open his mouth and let the pure wisdom and glory of God pour forth from his lips. And then for 2 hours, the world ceases to exist, because he takes us into the land beyond time and space, where we meet his beloved face to face. Sometimes he reads to us lately from Naimi's The Book of Murdad and Gibran's Jesus the Son of Man. And when he reads, the words take on new form and beauty because he breathes into them the spirit of the living God. At other times, he tells us stories of saints, gently pointing out the moral involved. Again, he tells of the days when he was searching for God, subjecting himself to every hardship and austerity known to man. But the most wonderful talk of all, which is truly not a story, but the greatest ever-living reality, is about the day when God took him up and making him one with himself, gave him universal vision, wherein he sees the light everywhere, and all beings as himself. Ah, Papa, what a rare privilege it is to be in your presence, nay, to be even think of you. Because to think of you is to think of God and brings us one step nearer to the goal. In the November issue of The Vision was a small supplement which read, quote, "The readers of The Vision are hereby informed that Swami Ram Dass's general health continues to be fairly good. He is not observing Mona or silence. He is normally active. But as complete rest is considered necessary, he has stopped touring for 3 years and correspondence for the future. As a result of this notice, loving friends and devotees everywhere, not able to believe the assurance given the Papa's health continues to be fairly good, are telephoning long distance, sending telegrams, and writing letters of anxious inquiry until he is fairly deluged with them. He sits in the midst of it, blesses them for their love and concern, and laughs at the wonderful lila God is providing for him. He says that for years he has been answering many letters every day, but that all of a sudden, as he tried to dictate, he commenced to have a headache. As long as he dictated, the headache persisted. When he stopped dictating, the headache ceased. This continued day after day until he realized that this was God's way of telling him that he did not wish him to write any more letters. He says he has poured himself out in all of the books which he has written, and that the devotees will find the answer to every problem, to every inquiry, if he will but continue to read and study his teachings. He does have some rheumatic pain and slightly general debility due to age. But if all of his loved ones could come here and see him, pursue all of his usual activities in normal fashion, their fears would cease and they would again take up the constant repetition of Ram Nam, which alone will keep him here and take them to God. It is his feeling that with the cessation of his traveling and writing activities, his constant communion with God will not only serve them, but the whole world in a far greater manner. It is his feeling that with the cessation of his traveling and writing activities, his constant communion with God will not only serve them, but the whole world in a far greater manner. He is always available to all those who wish to come and see him, and it is his greatest prayer that, forgetting all else, they will fix their full attention upon the one God, the author of their beings, and through the repetition of his holy name, and find that it is Papa himself who sits upon the altar of their hearts. After dinner and his evening walk, we all gather together in the Bhajan hall to sing sacred songs and for arati. There are some wonderful voices, both among the devotees of the ashram and those who come to visit, so we have many wonderful evenings. The whole atmosphere becomes so greatly charged with the Spirit of God that the arrows fly in and add their voices in the chanting of his blessed name. It seems as though I must be dreaming when one evening, having been in deep meditation, I opened my eyes and saw a sparrow and a large honeybee sitting close together on the floor before Papa, as though they too had come to worship at his feet. And over the whole ashram hovers the spirit of the Divine Mother, the Blessed Mother Krishnabai, who, with her heavenly smile and her bliss-filled eyes, ministers to all of her children everywhere. O Blessed Lord Jesus, here is the fulfillment of your dream. Here is the divine love and peace on earth and goodwill toward all men. There are so many writings of mothers and talks that she has made that we have plans for publishing, but doesn't she just write beautifully? And you can tell what an uplifted state she is and how glued she is to Papa at that time. She herself was wondering whether she is being disloyal to Master when she was embarking upon going to India and Anandashram in particular to see Papa Ram Dass. I think it was fortuitous for all of us that Mother, so to speak, broke the mold of Master in the sense that she was so exclusively devoted to him. And she became a Tirtha, and Tirtha in India is where three rivers come together. And it's considered a very, very sacred spot. And here we have Master and Papa and Mother all converging into one beautiful river, a stream of divine consciousness that flowed to all of us through Mother, that continues to flow through Papa and Master. It is not a competition. It is not as if there can only be one Master or one Papa or one Mother. These great beings who came as avatars, descent of divinity into flesh, came to awaken mankind to the greatest spiritual beatitudes that are possible. They did not see it as something for themselves only. It is the nature of organizations oftentimes after a great spiritual master to come that they claim that one as theirs exclusively. And it is inevitable, I suppose, that the ego gets involved with it. Now, Anandashram has assiduously gotten clear of any kind of feeling of it is only them, or that it is even only Papa, although they have adopted Mataji's terminology of Papa as the universal being. And she explained herself. She said, "You all sit here listening to Papa, and you think of him as a man. You think of him as an individual, and he is humorous and he is wise, but you don't understand Papa's true nature. Papa's true nature is universal. He is the universal divine being." Now, many might object to that characterization. Can an individual merge and become one with the divinity? But isn't that what Jesus asserted for himself? And he said, if I only said it for myself, my words might not be true. But my Heavenly Father himself corresponds to this that I am saying. He affirms it. I know it in every cell of my being. My consciousness is merged with the Heavenly Father's. And therefore, I and my Father are one. This is tremendous. This is tremendous. And that he said it not only for himself, but he said it for all mankind. Because to him who he gave the grace and the power, gave he power to become sons of God. The very same as Jesus himself was. He was not there to proclaim himself a God in that sense. It is not that the human being becomes God. It is that that soul within the human being emerges from the little womb of the human being and emerges itself into the divinity, into the universality. This is absolutely critical to understand because man's material mind tends to identify with material agents of the divine presence so that Jesus becomes a God, Master becomes a God, Papa becomes a God, not in the universal sense, but through that human expression. Now, the mind needs something to focus itself upon. And so we take an image of God. We take Mother. We take Master. We take Papa. We immerse the mind in it. But when a true Master meets with a true devotee, the devotee moves through the Master like an open door and goes out into the universality. And now it discovers the true nature of the spiritual Master. So it is true that you can focus your mind upon any great spiritual master and derive the full benefit. That is, you merge into the divinity of your own being and you recognize that the same divinity that you felt in the master, you now experience in yourself. and the two rivers merge us into one universal sea of consciousness. When you experience it, there's no doubt about it. But if you become too focused upon the material creation, the humanness of the individuality of God's expression, even if that one is a full expression, error will enter in. And this is where organizations oftentimes go wrong, because they claim that one as theirs exclusively, and all others are wrong. And this kind of nullification, they can give lip service to the fact that all paths lead to one. But really, their inner teachings are only through our way, only through this way. And this is not true, nor can it ever be true. This path is universal. It is for the aspiring individual who, in all honesty and truthfulness, learns to attune their minds in a new way. We have Master's beautiful teachings here, and he's talking about manifesting the spiritual power and grace, the same thing Papa is talking about, through the body, and therefore perfecting this human body. Now, this is a tremendous teaching in the sense that we don't make a god of the body. I met a devotee not long ago who was very fixated upon wanting eternal life in the body and perfect health all the time. And that was his focal point. And this is a misdirection of the mind. This is humanizing these teachings and making this body the object of worship, and not wanting to keep the body in good health and longevity in order to realize the true object of life, which is God realization. So it can seem like a fine distinction, bringing the divine energies into the human body and thereby perfecting it in all of its ways. But that's not the ultimate object. The ultimate object, of course, is realizing the infinite Lord within. But Master talks about here the food in the future. The future food of all the world will come by receiving different rays from cosmic energy. Cosmic rays, electrons, atoms, and air drawn through different openings of the body. If one constantly keeps his mind concentrated upon the point between the eyebrows at the Christ Center and sees there the spiritual eye and commands it to recharge the body with strength, it will do so. By doing this, people will cease to grow old. So you focus your attention here at the Ajna. You feel that it is being charged with this dynamic life force, this prana. Now, as Lari Mahashai talked about, there are two forms of prana. There is prana with a small p and prana with a capital P. Prana with a small p is life energy. It is the, you might say, ordinary life energy that enters into this body and sustains it. And when it is withdrawn, then the body comes into a state of death. But as long as it's active, then there is life in this body. Prana with a capital P is divinely charged life energy. It is blissful energy and filled with light. It is of a higher vibration, you might say, a higher order of life energy. And so when you feel this form of life energy coming in, you feel the bliss of God. You feel the upliftment, the transformation. If you're just simply getting ordinary life energy, it's wonderful. You feel vitalized. You feel awake, but you feel calm. It's sattvic. But the higher goes beyond sattvic and taps into pure spiritual gold that will come into your being. So you can experience this in either way. But focusing here at this ajna And as I focus my mind there, I can feel so greatly the medulla at the back of the head. And there is a stream of energy that goes directly from the medulla into this Christ center. Now, Master identified it with the medulla nerve plexus. But I feel it right at the base of the skull. And it enters into here, and Master traced that to the medulla, and then Mother said it went to the optic thalamus, and from the optic thalamus it goes directly in to the back of the eyes, or if you're focused at the ajna, it goes directly into the ajna. And it produces the light by which these two eyes see. It also awakens and empowers this third eye point that is here, the point between the eyebrows. And so as you focus your attention there and you sense that energy coming in at the back of the head and you charge the ajna. Now the ajna is the doorway, the gateway into divine consciousness, into Christ consciousness. And so you focus your attention there and you feel yourself being charged. You feel yourself being fed. And when you tap into that prana with the capital P, you feel yourself merged into a blissful state of consciousness. And then that life energy can go out throughout your entire body. And you can charge your entire, this is food for you. This is food for the body. And Mother described how the Hatha yogi, who was well beyond 100, I think he was in his 130s, and his spiritual master was over 200 years in age. And that his master asked him to take a trip walking across India and back. And he took no money with him and he took no food with him, nor did he eat. And he practiced this Kachari Mudra by putting the tongue up into the soft palate, concentrating on the ajna and this mana from heaven. And I've heard it many, many times. It drips down from the base of the brain and in toward the back of the throat. And you can hear it and you can feel it. And with the inner vision, you can see it. And it drops down in. And this Hatha yogi was able to charge his system and feed himself. And he didn't require any food throughout this entire time. So Master's second here is drawing energy from the cerebrum and medulla by connecting the tip of the big tongue with the little tongue, the uvula. And so here he's talking about this Kachari Mudra. And you take the tongue up, and as I described, and then you get this mana from heaven. You get this secretions that come down from the brain. The third one is, energy may be drawn from the sun by covering the whole body with a piece of thick blue silk or a blanket and keeping the medulla exposed with the sun shining there. On the back of the head, concentrate upon the back of the head and feel it getting warmer and warmer. Feel the energy being stored in the brain and distributed through the body. So this is taking advantage then of the natural prana that is coming in through the sunlight, because prana is manifested in nature. We can feel this. We can go to certain parts of creation, of nature, and we feel that there are some areas that are charged. There are other times that you feel that there's a very negative vibration and it can actually sap you of all of your energy. And of course, there are man-made created places. You can go into a sanctuary, and perhaps there you feel uplifted. You feel the spiritual vibrations, particularly if there have been God-tuned souls who have meditated and communed deeply with God in these areas. But there are places in nature that are naturally divinely charged areas. And I remember walking through the woods one time, and I came into this cathedral grove of trees, and there were seven trees and they were all in a circle, and I walked into the circle and I looked up into the sky and I could just feel a tremendous spiritual power flowing in this area. And so there are areas like this in nature. I think it is why many times people like to climb to mountaintops, because they get there and they get the vista. But they also feel that there is an uplifting influence, consciously or unconsciously, they get it. And so you learn to tune into these things, and you also learn where there are negative influences at. And when something saps your energy or appeals to something negative within your unconscious mind, then you learn to avoid places like that. And you go to those places which are sacred. And this is where we come into communion and connection with divinely charged beings. When somebody is merged in the divine consciousness, then it helps to uplift the entire room. Papa's sitting in his chair, and he didn't have to be doing anything very extraordinary. He could just be looking and smiling. He could be telling stories. He could be chanting God's name. He could be just inwardly indrawn and feeling the upliftment with God. And Jesus had said, "And if I be lifted up, will lift up this entire world with me." And this is the truth, that any time you enter into these higher states of consciousness, you draw all those up with you, and particularly those who are God tuning their minds. We become like a tuning fork, and that vibration begins to vibrate inside of us, and it creates a power, an uplifting power, a transforming power. And we begin to transform inside of us. We feel ourselves vibrating with that highest spiritual power. And when it comes from that pure source, it tunes us into it. And so by keeping our minds focused upon that one, we then are transformed within ourselves. And the proof is in the fruit of the tree, as Jesus talked about, that if that fruit is God consciousness, then that one who we are listening to, that we are in the proximity of, is also in God consciousness. And so this is, we look for the fruits of things. And sometimes someone or something feels all right in the beginning, and then it begins to go off course. And it's not just something that's happening in us, because we will experience, of course, all of our subconscious demons coming up, because they have to be purified. But we sense that something on the externals is going wrong. I remember there was a devotee of Mother's who had at one time been with Jim Jones. And you may recall the story, but he ended up going to South America and there establishing a colony. And things very much went off course. And everyone, either voluntarily or involuntarily, ended up committing suicide, 900 people. It's a terrible tragedy. And this is the way that things can go when things go off course. Now, sometimes somebody starts out with true spiritual experiences, but then the human ego takes over. And perhaps they draw dark forces to themselves. They open themselves. They don't keep on the razor's edge, as it talks about in the Vedas, that the razor's edge is keeping your mind completely upon God, surrendered to God. And that if you make a mistake, you quickly admit that, and you get right back onto the spiritual path. Those that I've seen that have gone off the path, they've not self-corrected. They've not had the humility in order to admit that they've made an error. They make excuses for it, and they continue in their ways. This is someone who has completely betrayed their calling. And Jesus left his harshest criticism for those who were supposed to be the leaders in the spiritual community, those who were supposed to be the teachers and the rabbis. And neither were they allowing others to go in, nor were they themselves going in. And so they became active blocks to those who are seeking to gain entry into the heavenly kingdom. This is a terrible, terrible thing to do. And when somebody gets off course like that, they have a huge price to pay. They not only have to pay for their own karma, but they have to pay for those that they have misled along the way. Now, even great spiritual masters can make mistakes along the way. And so the proof is, do they course correct? Do they, in humility, surrender themselves at God's feet, and get back on course again? Or do they continue in their ways? And so this is a test for every one of us. Now, we can feel bad if we do something that takes us off course, and we should. We should. We should have a soul sickness. We should have a terrible feeling if something has gone wrong. But what do we do about it then? And when we take it to God and we say, God, I was trying to serve you. I was seeking you out alone. And I can see now where my thinking started to go wrong. And instead of turning my mind back to you, surrendering to you, fighting for you with everything in my body, I went with it. And as a result of that, it took me off course. And I've paid a huge price for that. But I'm back at your feet now. And I want more than anything else to serve you, to love you, to realize the divinity that you are. And then we put ourselves back on track again. And we do it with all of our heart, all of our strength, all of our mind, all of our soul. And when we do this, then we truly, God, there may be a price to pay around this. There may be. But if we're willing to pay the price, one time God showed to me that everything that I've done in my life, I should be willing to be able to see it as headline news. And what would I do in response to that, in reaction to it? Would I cringe? Would I hide away? Would I seek to blot that out somehow? Or could I stand before God and everyone and say, well, this is true, and this is something that happened. And I learned from this, and as a result of that, I got back onto the path with God and got right with God again. And if I'm right with God, if I'm right with gurus, then the rest of the world can do whatever it wishes to do with it. Some, perhaps, can see it as a cautionary tale. Others can have compassion. Others can have hatred and condemnation. It's of no never mind to me. My only focus is, am I right with God? Am I right with gurus? And if I'm right there, then everything else will take care of itself. Now, far better for us to expose it to the daylight. This does not mean we need to go out and tell everybody everything. That is not beneficial always to the individual or to those who are being told. But that inwardly, we feel pure, we feel clean, we feel clear. And that if something should come to light, then so be it. We know what we know. We know who we are. We know what we have done. Every soul, since creation started, and souls have gotten themselves enmeshed and embroiled into this world, have made errors. And that includes all the great spiritual masters. But they learned from those errors. And as a result, they purified their minds. And as a result of that, they realized God. So, if we come across one who has fallen, if we have come across one who has made a mistake, let us look for that contrition, for that getting back on track. Let us see it as a cautionary tale. Let us have compassion for such a one. And perhaps most of all, let us pray for that one. Because we all need each other. We need each other. We need each other on this spiritual path. We need to support each other, love each other, nurture one another, because none of us have been perfect. None of us have been perfect. And this is a great thing to learn in this life. Master continues on with the food for the future. Take a sun bath and concentrate deeply upon the sun-bathed surface of the body, and drink the sunshine in through every pore of your body. concentration upon the sun rays gives one 100 times greater results than taking the sun bath absent-mindedly. So rather than just sitting out and tanning yourself, you're consciously feeling the prana entering in through the sun. Now, this time of year isn't so easy to do because we don't get so much sun. And there's been much that has been written about the dangers of sun, but Master's not talking about spending the whole day out in the sun. He's talking about 20 minutes and that it's all right. It's all right. And that you can consciously take in the energy of the sun. Now, another way to do it is you can rub your hands together and then hold it up to the sun and feel the warmth and the vibrancy of the sun's rays coming on your hands. And then feel that going in and entering in through your whole body. And you can replenish yourself in a hurry this way. You can go from a very fatigued state. I remember I had looked forward to going with a friend to a Catholic church. And I think perhaps I was thinking of a church, perhaps like Brother Sun, Sister Moon, this magnificent cathedral, that the candles would be burning and incense would be swinging and lovely, lovely. It wasn't like that at all. It was a very modern church. All of the stained glass was not pictures of anything. It was this kind of modern art look that were just colored glass put together in random disarray. And the service wasn't any more inspiring than the stained glass. And when I walked out of there, I felt completely drained. And so there's lovely sunshine at the time, it was down in Southern California, and I went out and I rubbed my hands together like this, and I went from this completely drained state to feeling all right again, this sattvic flow of energy. And it's a shame, really, isn't it? You go into a church thinking that you're going to get God contact. Instead, you come out feeling very drained by the experience. But this is a way that I recharged, and I told Mother about it afterwards, and she said, very good, very good. The fifth way is to sit upright on a chair. Close your eyes, expel the breath quickly, but start inhaling very slowly through the nostrils, thinking that your brain, lungs, heart, spine, stomach, abdomen, thighs, legs, arms, and so forth are all being filled with air. You can also inhale quickly and fill the whole body with atomic power in oxygen. So you can exhale quickly, then start to inhale, and as you inhale, feel this pranic air coming into you and filling your whole body. We're so unconscious about the way that we live. And so many times we're working and working and working, and then we realize we're just completely exhausted. And so we look for a candy bar, or we look for a coffee or something to juice us up so that we can continue going. But we stimulate the adrenal glands get fatigued, and essentially our whole body starts to run out of juice. We have direct access through the medulla and through oxygen and through sunlight to this pranic life force. And when we begin to utilize this, we can begin to recharge our whole body system, but to do it in a calm, smooth, sattvic kind of way. These are wonderful, wonderful teachings. And the more we rely upon this pranic energy, the more that we will enhance our health, because this is what establishes health. As we learn through Oriental medicine, these subtle pranic life ways, or in Chinese medicine, qi, as it flows through the body, this is what creates feeling energetic. This is what creates health. Now, most of us rely upon air and food and sunlight in order to get these things. But we can get more direct to the source through oxygen, sunlight, and prana. And by consciously connecting the feeling and the openness to the pranic, because this opens the doorway, this pranic flow comes in. And you can do that through your medulla at any time, at any place. Even while you're going to sleep, you can open yourself to the pranic flow within you and just feel, because it's sattvic, it calms your whole being. And you can feel yourself filled with energy and drifting off to sleep. These seem like two different occurrences, don't they? Because oftentimes, if we feel filled with energy, we're not sleepy. But we can have this sattvic flow coming into us, and we're helping to program our minds to remain open to pranic flow throughout the night, and also through our dream periods, and also when we wake up in the morning. And so that this becomes a constant feature, where you have this pranic flow coming in you and through you. You have potential for such tremendous spiritual power. It's wonderful. It's wonderful. A master used to go for days and nights without sleep. And he was able to do that because he had this constant recharging coming into him. Now, he wasn't walking around groggy all the time and sleep deprived. If he was, then he would not be the example of these teachings. But rather, he could keep himself in a awake, alert, calm, clear state throughout the day and throughout the night. Now, we don't have to force ourselves to go into sleep deprivation. We can positively work to attract more life energy and observe within ourselves when we begin to get afraid. Oh, I'm not going to go to sleep, and so if I don't get sleep, then I'm going to be tired the next day. And we program that into our brains right there. And so we let that thought just go downstream. And then we open ourselves up to this life-giving prana flowing into us and recognizing this is the bread of life. This is the power. And it is the wine of life. This is the bliss that comes into our beings. You see, there's so much for us to learn. There's so much for us to experience. And if you feel, well, I'm just so wedded to these old habits, just begin with where you're at. Where else could you begin at anyway? And just begin where you're at. And just start working with these things. Take these teachings. Apply them. How many times do we hear things and then we walk out the door and we immediately forget it? And we don't apply it. What good are teachings unless we're applying them, unless we're working with them actively? It's only through this that we will go through the transformation, that we will open these doors, and that this infinite power that Papa and Master both refer to, that Mother talks about, begins to manifest in us, and that we can not only transform our own lives, but all lives as well, and bring healing, peace, and goodwill to this earth. It's so much in need of it. I see now where there are big banners flying around in the sky advertising marijuana, and that's the drug of choice these days, apparently, and being legalized. What people don't realize is that it has a tamasic value to it, and that they're really looking for sattvic bliss, really looking for sattvic bliss. And I guess the world will have to be their guru for a while longer to really turn the mind in and find that bliss. There's nothing greater. Become like that melted butter in your consciousness and just feel your consciousness spreading out in the most delicious sense of peace and beauty, love and light. There's nothing like it. There really isn't. And it satisfies all of the heart's desires. It really does. Will you please pray with me? O Heavenly Father. Divine Mother. I feel the wonder and the beauty of thy glorious presence in every part of my being. My heart is bursting with my love for Thee.
My heart is bursting with my love for
Thee. I kneel in adoration at Thy feet.
I kneel in adoration at Thy feet.
And surrender myself to Thee.
I surrender myself to Thee.
I feel the power of Thy perfection.
I feel the power of Thy perfection.
Surging in every cell of my body.
Surging in every cell of my body.
My mind and my intelligence.
My mind and my intelligence.
Are radiant with Thy healing light. My soul is filled with the ecstasy and bliss.
My soul is filled with the ecstasy and bliss.
Of my communion with Thee.
Of my communion.
I and my Father are one.
I and my Father are one.
Blessed Spirit, I am He. Great light of God within you and all about you.